Before we start our episode, we want to acknowledge the tragic death of Johnny and Matthew Gaudreau.
Our sincerest condolences to Matthew and Johnny's families, friends, and everyone they touched in their lives.
This goes way above hockey. It doesn't matter what logo you cheer for on the front. The name on the back today is Gaudreau.
This episode is dedicated to Johnny and Matthew. Please, don't drink and drive. Well, gentlemen, here we are. We are ready for another episode. How are we feeling?
It's hot. It is a hot day today. We thought summer was over. It's not.
It is a hot day.
Yeah, I'm not dressed for this today.
You're not, no. Paul showed up wearing a jersey because we were all going to wear a jersey, and then I screwed everything up and forgot my jersey at home.
I'm not going to lie to you. That's okay, I think, if we wait another week because it is too hot to wear a jersey, Paul. I do not envy you, my friend.
The fact that you're not sweating right now baffles me. Because I'm not wearing a jersey, I got a sleeveless shirt on, and I'm sweating.
I can't trust you if you're not sweating right now. Like, is that really true?
Are you human?
Yeah, they say, I guess, proper insulation does wonders for keeping your body the temperature.
Are you trying to say that I'm improperly insulated? Because I would agree with you.
I don't know. I've got lots of insulation.
It's just placed in the wrong parts.
Placed in the wrong parts.
It's been an interesting, week since we last talked. What's been up? What's been new? What's happening?
Well, obviously the tragic news off the top of our show, Johnny and Matthew Gaudreau passing. The hockey community, it comes together in hordes, really, and it's pretty amazing to see social media, the reports, you know, on the sports channels, on TV, anything you can read online or wherever you get your news for that matter. You can see just a united front for those two guys. Not only was obviously Johnny such a great hockey player in the NHL, but, you know, just the tragedy that hit their family and the timing of it and the circumstances of their death and the situation leading up to how they died. Yeah. It's just terrible news all around. And of course, you know, getting rid of that somber feeling, hopefully we can, you know, kind of move on now and talk about some happier things. But you can't help but acknowledge, especially us all being huge hockey fans, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, and not only that, but Paul and I are our parents. You have family that you love and are very close to. And I can't imagine what his family is going through at this moment, you know. Not even Johnny's, but his brother Matthew's too, because I know he's got a wife and I think he has kids too.
Expecting child.
Yeah. So, you know, just so tragic and so needless. Like, these are the type of things where, you know, the bad decision on one person's, that one person makes can affect an entire community of people, right? The amount of those who are, you know, showing up at the Saddle Dome, showing up in Columbus, and just like the vigils that are happening, it's you can't help but be emotional about it.
Well, you know, and he left the Flames for his family. You know, that it was a family decision for him to sign to Columbus. It wasn't a business decision or anything like that. In the end, it was what he felt comfortable with in regards to being close to his immediate family. I remember my sister's husband introduced me to Johnny Hockey. I had no idea who this guy was. But bought me a Johnny Hockey jersey. I'm like, sure, I'll wear this. And went to the game and lights out. You know, he had a lot of skill. He was definitely a player you'd remember for the size that he was. And just an all-around good guy. Like, anything you read about him, any interview you saw with him, he was happy as could be, and the hockey world and just, you know, the world in general has lost a good human being.
There's people all over, you know, people who are hockey fans in, you know, Europe and other places that are mourning this loss too. So it's definitely hit a lot of people differently.
Not to throw any shade either on the Columbus Blue Jackets, but if you look at that team and kind of where they've been in the standings and maybe not the progress they've wanted to make the last few seasons, Zach Werenski, I believe it was today, was, you know, coming out and speaking about the loss. And I'm paraphrasing, but he said, you know, Johnny, thank you for choosing Columbus when not many people would or didn't want to come here to play, right?
That's right.
And he, like you say, Paul, he made that decision for his family, And ultimately, you know, the tragedy that followed is just, I don't even know what to say.
The day before his sister's wedding,
yeah,
he was a groomsman and so was Matthew.
Yep, they're both of them. Yeah.
It's just, yeah, it's tragic. So tragic.
And even you have to look at, you know, like your type of player personnel, Horensky. Sean Monahan signed with the Columbus this year to play with Johnny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Now he's never going to have that opportunity again.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, yeah, it's really sad when you think about it. But, you know, unfortunately, you know, these things do happen in the world, and we still have a podcast to record, so
we do.
You
know, yep.
There's lots of positives that are still happening out there too. Moving on, we do have a lot of stuff to look forward to this year as well.
Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to sort of touch on maybe some people who had some great careers, or people who played in the NHL for a long time, just as kind of an intro to some retirees that we had this offseason. A couple more notable than others, but we'll mention the four that that retired this offseason. Stephen Fogarty, he retired from the Minnesota Wild. He retired at 31. He wasn't really a big points guy. He was drafted by the Rangers 72nd overall. He played for the Rangers, the Sabres, the Bruins, and the Wild. He only had 31 career NHL games. He didn't play a lot in the NHL. Three career points. You know, forechecker, serviceable forward, a career AHLer for the most part. But, yeah, he retired this year. Do you guys... I don't really know the player much, to be honest with you.
Every time I see, every time I hear the name, I keep thinking of John Fogarty.
So. John, yeah. Hard not to, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the NHL video game? That's probably the only place I've ever seen his name.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Hey, man, you've made it if you've made it to the video game. Let's
that
be
is
honest.
True. That is yeah, very true, actually.
That's right. As much as we could sit here and say, I don't really remember this player, well, hey, he was in the show,
that's
so
right.
Nobody, a lot of people aren't. another Minnesota Wild player that retired this year, Alex Goligoski, who had quite a serviceable career. I didn't realize this. I was just looking it up the other day, and he actually had over 1,000 career games in the NHL. 1,078. So he that's was drafted by the Penguins, 61st overall. And he also played for four teams. He played for the Penguins, the Stars, the Coyotes, and the Wild. He had a few more points, part of that Silver Stick Club, like I said, over 1,000 games. But he ended up with 475 career points. So, and he was 39, just yeah, retired. So he had a pretty long career for sure. Yeah,
that is cool, yeah. I mean, I've got lots of memories of Goligoski, most notably for me playing with the Stars. With the Canucks, playing against the Canucks and stuff. I believe Goligoski played for the Stars during that game. I don't know if you're familiar with the game where one of the Stars players was making fun of Kevin Bieksa. And he was like imitating him. And then Alain Vigneault was on the bench and he couldn't hold back the laughter. It was so funny. The funniest part of that whole thing is Vigneault not being able to control himself because it was so funny. I'm pretty sure Goligoski played for the team during that time. It wasn't Goligoski that did that, but it's just for some reason that's what it reminds me of.
I remember when the trade went down between Dallas and Pittsburgh. At the time, everyone very much thought it was not a good deal. It was James Neal and Matt Niskanen for Alex Goligoski. So Goligoski went to Dallas, and Neal and Niskanen went to Pittsburgh.
Wow.
In the end, I'm pretty sure Pittsburgh won that deal. Considering Goligoski was, I think, like third or fourth defenseman on the team. Wasn't even the top. So it was quite interesting to see how that value of that trade worked out over time.
A lot of GMs will say, you know, I'm not going to make a change for the sake of making a change. But sometimes making a change like that, different systems, more playing time, filling a certain need.
Yeah.
You never know how it's going to pan out, really. Mark Stahl retired this year.
Holy cow.
You know, yeah. I was... When I think of the Stahls, specifically Mark, now maybe you guys can, without doing some extensive research on it, I thought that he had a lot of injury problems in his career.
Mm-hmm.
But it looked like through the seasons that he played, there were... he played a lot of games. I mean, again, he played 1,176 games in the wow. NHL over 17 seasons.
So he got the silver stick.
He did too, yeah.
Nice.
You know, first round draft pick by the Rangers again, 12th overall, the year I graduated, 2005.
You old timer, you.
Yeah, that's right. The Rangers, Wings, Panthers, and Flyers, he all played for. He had 234 career points. As a defenseman, you're probably not going to rack up the points too much. No. Second oldest of the Staal brothers. Actually, didn't know that. I thought Jordan was the second oldest. Yeah. So he was the second oldest, and obviously right behind his brother Eric. And as I said, yeah, he played 17 seasons in the NHL.
Yeah. 37 years old.
Yep.
37 years old. So it's funny because, like, as an older gentleman now, I think back to when I was 37, and I feel like I could have, I still had the energy to play sports at that age. Of course, that's because I'm blinded by how old I am now and how incapable of doing things I am now. But it's funny when you think about, like, these guys retiring, but they're playing an intense game. Yeah. For, in this case, 17 years. You know, that's a long time to play, you know, hockey at the NHL level. So, you know, good on him. Good on him for all the 1,176 games.
And for the style of play that he was playing, too, right? You know, to make it to 37, even for that style, like, he was a banger. And not a lot of bangers make it to that age.
That's for sure. Anybody else?
I would say probably the most notable on this list. I'll do a little teaser here as people are listening and maybe they can take a guess. This person was drafted the lowest out of the four that retired this year. He was drafted 205th overall in 2003. He was drafted by the San Jose Sharks. And this player in the NHL only played for two teams.
Yeah. Okay.
Any guesses, boys? You'll know Joe for sure. You watch that division all the time.
Yeah, I have an idea. I'm curious if Paul knows.
I'm going to have to defer. I can't think.
It's got to be Pavelski.
Joe Pavelski.
Yeah.
Yeah. He did play a year in Europe when COVID happened. He played for Magnitogorsk. 1,332 career games. And over 1,000 points, too. 1,068.
And those career games, do they include playoff games?
Yes, they do.
Okay.
Yes, they do. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, this stat surprised me because when I think of Pavelski, I think a star player, all-star eight times, I want to say, without actually looking. And his career high in points in a season was 79. And the same year he had that total in points was also his career high in goals, and he had 41.
I never picture him as like an elite goal scorer. You know, I see him more of as like a really good playmaker.
Playmaker.
Really good defensive stick too, like, you know, played a really good two-way game. He's the type of player you would have killed to have on your team for sure.
Yep. Hockey IQ through the roof.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, he brought so many intangibles, right? Like he's known for his leadership. He was known for giving his all on the ice. You know, it's not always about the points you put up. It's the impact you make on the team. And
definitely.
He was most definitely one of the more impactful players, you could probably say, in the entire league.
I'm predicting that San Jose retires his jersey for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Him, Jumbo, and Marlowe together.
Yeah.
All at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty exciting San Jose team to watch then.
Yeah.
Maybe not so much now, but who knows? They made some additions in the offseason.
Cody Ceci.
Speaking of older players, I did see this note today. I just wanted to mention, just as Leaf fans, the Ottawa Senators signed a player today to a PTO, 38 years old. He has not played in the NHL since 2018. Former number 41, Nikolai Kuhlman.
Yeah.
Trying to come back to the show.
This is the beauty of PTOs is that he can do his best to try and make the team. I've seen these PTOs go down the drain right away in a training camp. So, like, the benefit to Ottawa is doesn't cost him anything other than a roster spot, you know. But it's the preseason. He'll play a couple preseason games, and if he doesn't look good, then he goes back probably to the KHL or somewhere else where he'll actually get some ice time.
You have to wonder with this stuff sometimes, considering he played for the Leafs, that whether Ottawa's doing this for somewhat of a jab. It's been 6 years, but you know,
but
you have
who's
to get
it a jab against them or the Leafs? Because exactly. If I'm the Leafs, I'm like, you can have them, right?
Based maybe it builds momentum on both sides.
Maybe
watch him put up 25 goals.
Probably.
Well, he has been playing professional hockey against men.
Well, he's a good player.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, he was. I was a serviceable player for sure. He's not going to play on your top line unless you have injuries. But He's a fun enough player to watch. He had some big goals. He could skate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wondering if he's maybe Russian Marlowe in some aspects.
Maybe. I'd be curious to
Please
see.
Don't give up a first.
Yeah, yeah, I'd be curious to see what happens there. What's really exciting for me is I'm seeing now players and teams kind of getting together now before training camp starts, and they're all skating and running drills and things like that because they want to be ready to go. Which is, this is not something you would have seen 10 years ago in the NHL, right? It's fun to see. As a fan, you're just like, this is great. These guys actually care and want to do something and make a difference.
It actually adds speculation to the fire, too, and you see certain players working out with other players.
Oh, don't even go there, Paul. I know exactly what you're
going to
say.
Whatever do you mean, Paul?
Oh, my goodness. Matthews I haven't seen it at all on social
McDavid,
media.
McDavid... You know, working out.
I think Leaf fans might be getting a little too excited. Perhaps
they shared a Timmy's flatbread.
Yeah.
It was terrible.
This has become a true Hollywood story when it comes to hockey players, eh?
Toronto, center of the hockey universe. Come on now.
Now, one thing we're going to be talking about on this podcast over time is all sorts of different sports. We're not going to stick to just hockey. We have interest in all sorts of different sports, and for me, I'm a big football fan. I don't know if you guys at all follow football. I know Brandon doesn't really follow football. You know about it. You kind of understand it.
I understand the game. I don't necessarily understand the chess game that goes with it. The strategy. I had a chiropractic appointment today, and I was telling my chiropractor about this work NFL pick league thing that kind of like a hockey pool, but like, for football,
like a fantasy thing,
fantasy picks and stuff. And I told him that we're gonna, and he starts going off for like 5 minutes about what I should do and how to read the points betting system. And I'm just like, wow,
yeah,
no clue. You're not, oh yeah. Well, you know, this team has a strong defensive running game or a terrible defensive running game. And the team they're playing against has a star running back. So I'm going to bet on that team because, you know, I'm just like, what are you talking about, man? Like
What's funny about that though is that you could say the same thing about hockey
or baseball
yeah, where you understand the the nuances of each player and you know what they bring to the table and probably even stats that will back up like the analytics of like what that game will look like, right? So like you might have an idea of like who might win that game based on that. That's what he's bringing to the table. I'm as much as a football fan as I am, I'm not that kind of football fan. Like I could not tell you know, who's the strongest running back or whatever.
Yeah.
But I do have an interest in football. And one specific thing that I wanted to talk about today was the CFL, the Canadian Football League. Because if we have a lot of Americans who are listening to this podcast, they might be going, well, what is the CFL? They might not be familiar with it. And how does it differ from the NFL? But let me tell you a couple of differences about the CFL when it comes to the NFL with rules and things like that. The CFL is a bigger field. It's a larger field, so wider and longer. It's also, you actually get an extra 5 yards, I believe, on both sides. And with the CFL, you actually have a shorter amount of time between plays. So in the NFL, you'll have like something like 40 seconds between plays or something like that. With the CFL, it's like 20 seconds. So you've got 20 seconds to come up with a plan as to in terms of what your next play is going to be, and then you have to hike the ball between that time period. That's called a play clock, for those of you who aren't familiar with football at all. And they have 3 downs in the CFL, whereas in the NFL you have 4 downs. So they call it a 3-and-out in the NFL. In the CFL, it's a 2-and-out. And what that means basically is you have 2 plays to get a first down. And if you don't get that first down in the 2 plays, you kick the ball back to the other team. Same as the NFL, except it's 3-and-out. You get 3 plays. So why is that more exciting for a fan to watch? Well, the reason is because when you have less plays to make a first down, they're going to be throwing the ball and moving the ball a lot more than they would in the NFL. In the NFL, you find they run the ball a lot more, which can be a little bit boring if you're waiting for something exciting to happen. In the CFL, it happens more often. Like, the plays happen because of that reason. And that's one of the reasons why NFL players who don't make the NFL come back or come over to the CFL, because A, they want to play professional football, and B, they actually like the way the game works, right? And that's why they haven't changed it all this time, because it's a faster, more kind of exciting style of football. So for those Americans who are listening, if you get a chance to watch, actually, here's another perfect example. Do you ever watch a sitcom on TV and they're watching football on that sitcom? If you happen to notice the TV when they're watching football, they're usually watching a CFL game. And the reason why is because the NFL is incredibly difficult to get the rights to. So like when a TV channel or whatever is trying to, you know, trying to display a football game, more often than not, they're watching a CFL game between like Toronto and Saskatchewan or BC and whoever. So that's kind of a little known tidbit.
I would have gone the rest of my life not knowing that unless you just told me that just now.
That's it's really cool. Funny. I was watching a show called Modern Family recently, and there was a scene where they were watching a football game, and it happened to be like BC at Edmonton or something like that. And they were playing it off like they were watching Green Bay play. You know what I mean? Because they are the same colors, basically, Edmonton and Green Bay. So really kind of funny kind of tidbit. But yeah, CFL is a really exciting game for a football fan. Even as somebody who's not so much of a football fan, but you have the opportunity to go see a game there, it's actually a really exciting football. The team that I happen to follow, of course, being that I'm from BC and I'm you know, homegrown, lived here my whole life, the BC Lions are my team. And right now, this year, the Grey Cup, which again is the championship game, will be played in BC. So just like the NFL, they choose sort of a neutral site every year. And this year it's going to be played in BC. So the BC Lions are trying their damnedest to make their way to the Grey Cup. And they're doing a really good job. Like, they've packed their team this year. They've re-signed Nathan Rourke, who is basically one of the best quarterbacks 2 years ago in the CFL. He played for BC, got most outstanding player, which is basically, out of all the players in the league, he was the most outstanding, most exciting to watch, most talked about player, because he's, you know, as a quarterback, he was making incredible plays. He ended up going to try out for the NFL the following season. He signed with the Jacksonville Jaguars, played on their practice roster, then ended up getting released, and then picked up by the New England Patriots. Ended up getting released by them, or waived by them, and then he ended up signing with the Giants in New York. And then from there, got released again, signed in Atlanta with the Falcons, and then got released from there as well. So he couldn't really get a chance to play in the NFL. It was really unfortunate, because he's a good enough quarterback. He could be a starter in the NFL. But when you already have these prolific starters in the league, it gets really, really hard to sort of burst your way in, right? So, yeah, the CFL is where he's come back to. He signed with BC again to play. He signed a 3-year contract, so the rest of this year and then 2 more years. Nice. So it's really, as a BC Lions fan, I could not be more excited. But the cool thing is that it's being talked about all over the league because of how prolific and well known he is across the league.
The only thing I know for sure in this situation is I hope to hell this guy collects air miles.
Yes, I'm sure he does.
Perfect time.
I'm sure he does. But
I have a question about money. And obviously the NFL is a gigantic market. Huge. Gigantic sport.
Probably the biggest in all of the
probably US. As far as dollars go, I would say, I don't think, I mean, baseball is probably up there too, but I don't think it could.
If I remember correctly, it's NFL, then NBA in terms of dollars.
Oh, that makes sense.
And then, and then Major League Baseball.
Right. So I read somewhere the other day that the highest paid quarterback in the NFL makes like $38 million a year.
Yeah. Per year.
Per year.
Yeah.
Do you know what the highest paid quarterback in the CFL makes?
That's Nathan Rourke.
Do you have any idea, Paul? Just take a guess. I'm curious.
$5 million?
Yeah. No.
You're not even close. $680,000.
So, okay, let's.
I have colleagues on the mainland that work for the same company as I do that make more than that.
I would love to make that kind of money.
Agreed.
Nathan Rourke signed a 1-year contract with the Atlanta Falcons. When he signed with the Falcons, $915,000. And that's just to play on their practice roster.
Wow.
So this is compared to like the CFL. He's still making that money even though he's released from the team. Like, they still have to pay him that money. So he's getting a crap load of money. Yeah, $600,000 is Zach Collaros. He plays for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. But Nathan Rourke's contract is going to be more than that. It's going to be the most in the CFL. It's going to be somewhere in the just under $1 million next year. Something like $900,000. But a lot of that, too, in the CFL, they have like little bonuses. They have part of the contract is he's got to do, like, he gets paid to do interviews and stuff like that. And that's all by the team. The team's paying him to do that. So, like, signing bonuses and stuff that allow him to do that. So, Nathan Rourke is a very, very exciting quarterback, and as BC Lion fan, I'm very excited to have him back. I was at his first game that he came back to play against the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. It was not a good game, unfortunately, but he was back for 3 days. He's still learning the playbook. You know, there's a lot when it comes to football that you as a quarterback have to kind of understand, right? And when you're playing your first game, you can't expect, you know, miracles. So I will admit a lot of us were expecting a miracle, but I wasn't completely like blown away by the fact that they lost the game. Like, it was kind of expected.
Yeah, when it comes to CFL, I haven't necessarily over the years been following as much as I used to. I used to go to games with my dad when we saw the Stampeders play, and usually BC was playing Calgary quite often, actually, in the semifinals.
I've seen BC lose to Calgary a lot of times live, especially in the West Final, stuff like that.
Well, I'd loved it when the, and this is dating myself a little bit, loved it when the Fluties played for, you know, we had Darren who played for the Lions and we had Doug who played for the Stamps. I remember those games very well. You know, those, you're looking at like mid to
Doug actually late played 90s. For BC as well. And so did Darren. What's interesting about that is Doug Flutie ended up going to play the NFL. Yes, he was a very good number one quarterback. And
for the Bills, I believe.
Yeah. And Nathan Rourke is expected to be that type of player.
Nice.
That type of quarterback. So, but actually, one other cool thing that happened to the Lions is another player who ended up going to play in the NFL as well was Matthew Betts, who is a defensive lineman. And so they make their money on quarterback sacks. That's what they're known for, defensive linemen. So Matthew Betts was he was the most outstanding Canadian last season. Ended up going to play in the NFL for the Detroit Lions. And then he just got released literally 2 weeks ago. Got released by the Lions. Signed again with the BC Lions last week. And he came to play for them for their first game this past Saturday, which was in Victoria, for a special game called Touchdown Pacific. They started doing this 2 or 3 years ago in the Atlantic. Basically, they were trying to showcase the CFL in smaller cities and stuff like that. And so they did a Touchdown Atlantic. It might have been in Nova Scotia or something like that. Anyways, this game was in Victoria, which again is a smaller city than Vancouver. And, you know, but they are called the BC Lions. So the idea is to basically showcase them across BC. And so Matthew Betts got to play and he got a sack. It was very exciting. The BC Lions did win and they actually played very well. So it was really nice to see Nathan Rourke come back and do what he can do and actually have the team play to their potential. And it gets you excited.
Do either of you guys know if there's a rule in the CFL? I imagine there is, about how many Canadians you have to have on
your
roster.
There is, yes. Yeah. Let me rephrase. There's actually a rule in how many Americans you can have on the team,
right,
or how many international players you can have on the team versus Canadians. Yeah, it's, you know, with the BC Lions, they're very exciting to watch right now. They were on a skid. They'd lost 5 straight games, but they were still leading the West, believe it or not, after losing 5 straight games. That win last game brought them up to 6-6. They're actually at .500 on the season and still leading the West. So,
wow,
super exciting. It's just the way the CFL works. The East is much stronger than the West.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's going to be a really, really interesting kind of rest of the season. And the big thing with the CFL is it starts to really pick up after Labor Day. So we're going to see some really intense games because they're going to mean something coming from here on out. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. And if you are new to the CFL, I definitely recommend checking it out.
I do have one story about the CFL, and it's the only CFL game that I've ever been to. It was 2012 summer. I was living in Edmonton. That was the only time in my life I lived away from here. And we went to Commonwealth Stadium. A good buddy of mine, Mike, he took me, and we went with our buddy Dana. And we were sitting in basically right in center. right in the center of the stadium. We're probably maybe 20 rows up. And there was an NHL draft pick that year in the midst of the Oilers' 10 straight first overall picks or whatever it was. Yeah. So in 2012, and they brought him out on the field to introduce him. I remember him wearing this bright orange sweater. And they were playing Calgary. I know Calgary's red, but I was just kind of thinking to myself, maybe put some green on or something, or yellow, or I don't know.
Yeah.
So they brought him out, and he was so happy and cheering, and everybody was cheering for him because, you know, he's the savior in Edmonton because they really needed one.
Yeah.
Any of you guys know who that pick was?
Yakupov?
Yep.
Nail Yakupov. Oh, okay. I see where your story's going now.
Him waving to the crowd and them cheering for him was probably the only time they did, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And on top of that, the halftime show and the after party was Finger 11.
Oh, yeah, okay.
No, they were bad.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
They were very, very bad. Oh. I didn't mind Finger 11 back in the day. They're not my favorite band by any stretch, but I mean, in high school, late high school, they were really popular. And the sound was so loud and it was distorted. And it was just, oh, no good. No good at all. The after party was pretty amazing, but not because Finger 11 was
right. Right.
You're even 12 beers deep at that point, but that was the only time I'd ever been to a CFL game.
To all of our American listeners, there were actually American teams in the CFL at one point.
Yes, there was. 1994. I remember it well. The Baltimore Stallions versus the BC Lions for the Grey Cup. And I was 12 years old, and we had just moved to Nanaimo. And my dad went to the bar to watch the game and got drunk. And I was watching it at home. We got really excited when Louis Pisaglia kicked the winning field goal to win the Grey Cup. And my dad came home. We were supposed to unpack the moving truck that night. And we unpacked the moving truck while he was drunk out of his mind. And my funniest memory of that was my dad falling asleep while standing up because he was so drunk from celebrating.
So two trivia for you in regards to these American teams. Do you remember what the first American team was that joined the CFL?
Okay, so if it wasn't Baltimore. I'm going to go with Las Vegas. The Las Vegas
Posse. In the same state, but not Las Vegas. Not the same state. It's in the state over.
Okay.
Which direction?
West.
Okay, let me think. There's the Baltimore Stallions, Las Vegas Posse.
I'm going to Google it and say the answer before you get
it. Yeah, honestly, I don't remember.
You want to Google it? Or no, do you want I me don't. Say? No, I don't. the Sacramento Gold Miners.
Sacramento.
Came in 93.
Yeah, it was interesting having American teams in the league. The whole point is they're trying to expand. It's a good idea. The big problem is, of course, you're competing with the NFL. So there are overlaps where, like, the NFL and CFL are playing. Like, right now, the NFL has just started. The CFL is almost done their season. They'll be done in November, whereas the NFL doesn't finish till February. So
my second question, and this is the only American team to be on the Grey Cup. What American team is that?
I'm pretty sure that's Baltimore.
You are correct.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Baltimore, yeah.
Is that because they beat BC?
No, BC won that game.
Ah.
But they were a good team. Baltimore was a really good team for a long time. So I think they played like five seasons or something.
Yeah,
like something
that. Do you know which team the Baltimore Stallions became once they converted them over to?
Got to be Ottawa. Ottawa is the only team that constantly folded and opened and folded and opened.
That's a good guess. It's not them.
Ooh, can I guess?
Yes.
I have no idea.
Good.
I was still having to have supervised baths at that point. Is it Hamilton?
No.
Ah,
I hate Montreal.
It is Montreal.
Montreal.
The Alouettes.
Yeah. Montreal was the only other one I could think of because, like I said, Ottawa has had a CFL team and lost it three times. They've been the Ottawa Rough Riders at the same time as the Saskatchewan Rough Riders.
Makes no sense.
Although Ottawa's Rough Riders was Rough Riders, two words, whereas Saskatchewan's one word. And then they folded, and then I believe they came back again as the Rough Riders. Then they folded again, then came back as the Renegades.
Yeah.
Then they folded and then came back now as the Red Blacks. And they've been more successful as the Red Blacks.
They've won, I think, a championship, haven't they?
I don't believe so. Maybe they have. That is a trivia question I don't know the answer to. But but I will say, I believe they've just got better ownership this time around. And you know, they're running a better operation. But, yeah, it's, you know, the CFL, it's different than the NFL, but it's very obviously different. And they don't try to be the same in any way, which I like. You know, the one thing that you try, you know, they always say, like, they always say copying is the biggest form of flattery or whatever. But I think when it comes to sports, if you're trying to differentiate yourself from another league, they're doing it the right way, you know. And I just think more people should watch because it is exciting football.
So you guys have all been to an NHL game.
Yes.
Multiple, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You've been to, I know Paul has. Have you been to a Major League Baseball game?
Never. No, never.
So you've been to CFL games. We've all been to those. What about NFL games? Have any of you guys seen?
No, I would love to, though.
No? What about basketball?
I had a really good friend in high school that actually got to train with Vince Carter and Trace McGrady for the Raptors. Just like for you shot basketball hoops, and if you won the contest, then you got to go hang out with the Raptors for a day. So, they've had the experience of going to a basketball game, a professional basketball game, but not myself.
I wouldn't call my experience professional basketball because it was the Vancouver Grizzlies, but I have been to a couple of different Grizzlies games, and they were fun, actually. I enjoyed myself a lot.
I got to get back into basketball because after the Raptors won the championship, which I was really focused on watching that season.
2018, right?
2019. 19. But, I mean, leading up to then, I was a big basketball fan, and it seemed like, I don't know, through COVID maybe, things changed so much, and I just, I kind of just stayed focused on hockey because that was the true passion. But I really haven't been into basketball as much, and I really want to. I mean, I love the Raptors. I loved the Raptors, especially growing up with them. They were a fairly new team as I was growing up, so just kind of watching them. But I have no idea where they're at. At all.
Yeah, I don't know either. Maybe you can kind of give us some information because I know it is something you follow a little bit more.
Yeah, I can go a bit over their off season and kind of what's been going on with the Raptors. Obviously, they were a championship team back in 2019. Pretty impressive. They had acquired
Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah, thank you.
The big one, yeah. I thought they went all in that year. Pretty much.
They did.
With what they could do, yeah.
Well, and giving up DeRozan, who was a fan favorite at the time, to get Kawhi. Like, that was a bold move on Masai Ujiri's part. But paid off, obviously. They won the championship.
Did they get Gasol that year, too?
Yes, they did. They traded Jonas Valanciunas at the time.
That's right.
To get Gasol.
He was going to be a big deal, Valanciunas was.
Yeah, they were expecting him to be.
Yeah.
Andrea Bargnani 2.0.
Yeah.
Much better than Bargnani.
Well, yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
The fact that they got a first-round pick for Bargnani when they traded him to the Knicks is still baffling. if we are looking at their offseason, though, they did do a lot of trades at the deadline. Gave up two franchise cornerstones last year in Pascal Siakam and OG Anunoby. They did end up actually trading they had three first-round picks and then one second-round pick. They did actually end up trading one of those first-round picks to Utah, which is the 29th pick, to get Kelly Olynyk, who is Canadian and a center. And Ochai Agbaji was the other player that they got in the deal who had been a first-round pick as well.
Based on these moves, it seems like, from the outside looking in, that they are kind of almost in a rebuild mode or a retool mode. See,
yeah, and that's what, as far as I know in terms of interviews, Masai has said that he wants to retool, not rebuild. And some of the moves that they've made are definitely in that regards. You could look at it as a bit of retooling. At this point, you'd have to say it's almost a rebuild just because they're building the team around Scotty Barnes now.
Yeah.
Who, again, was the surprise rookie of the year. Everyone was like, what are you doing picking this guy when Suggs was expected to go fourth overall? They picked Barnes, and Barnes won rookie of the year that year. With the picks that they had in the draft, so they did pick at 19th, and I'll kind of touch upon this. They could have possibly had a top six pick this draft. However, they had made a trade with the San Antonio Spurs 2 years prior to acquire Jakob Poeltl back, and it was only a top six protected pick. So if they fell out of the top six, that pick went to San Antonio, and they would move down in the draft. With the Raptors, they actually did finish the season with the sixth worst record at the end of the year. However, because the draft lottery works the way that it does, Atlanta moved up, and there was one other team that moved up, and it pushed the Raptors down to eighth.
I hate that. I hate that even for hockey. Like, it's just so frustrating when you're a fan of the team that's like sitting in a really sweet spot in the draft, and then the lottery screws you over. It's just like, ugh. You can't help but get that conspiracy in your mind where they've got it out for my team. You know,
that happened to the Canucks twice, didn't it?
Oh yeah,
in a row, like 2 years.
It happened to them the year that they became a team. They had a rule that. You couldn't get first overall. Actually, that's the same thing that happened to the Grizzlies, too. When the Grizzlies and the Raptors came in, they had a rule in the NBA that the expansion teams can't have a good draft pick. They couldn't win first overall, which is like, are you kidding me? Like, you're setting these teams up to fail, basically, right? So,
for argument's sake, what I would say about that in the NBA,
yeah.
You could probably say the same thing about baseball. You have individual players that can make your entire team.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
LeBron you have James. you have 8 players on your roster on any given night in an NBA game, right? You have one player. If that one player scores 45 points, well,
that's
there's
45 points
probably 45% of your points for the entire night.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, one impact player.
But at the same time, you can't tell me the Grizzlies couldn't have used a player like that.
Well, that's what I mean. That's probably why they don't allow that in that situation. Because in basketball specifically, that first overall pick quite literally could be miles above even pick number 2.
Yeah.
And then, you know, now you've got the next LeBron James or the next Steph Curry who puts up, you know.
The funny thing about the NBA, and this is my argument towards that in a sense, is that, yes, like, I agree with you. I think that's true. However, I think you need that in your new teams. You need those cornerstones so that the teams themselves can build that following that they need to. But the other part of that, too, is in the NBA, players last a year and then move on somewhere else. Like, they'll terminate their contracts randomly, you know? LeBron James has done it so many times, it's ridiculous. Like, people are following suit now. It's frustrating when you look at it because, you know, you look at hockey and there's definitely a lot more loyalty when it comes to hockey, but in the NBA, it just feels like people are just chasing money.
Well, you have to draw fans, right? Like, obviously, with a bit of the teardown that they were doing at the deadline last year, they did acquire RJ Barrett, who's one of the higher drafted Canadian players that's ever been drafted.
Yeah, that's true.
And you're going to draw fans by bringing Canadian talent to the only Canadian team that we have in the NBA.
I agree. No, that is really, it's like one of the only things they can do, right? When you can't keep a guy like Kawhi, like if they had kept Kawhi, like you got to think they probably would have had a chance to win another championship the following year, right? Like, but Kawhi wanted to go home where he's coming from in Los Angeles. So yeah, it's definitely, it's challenging to sort of follow that and kind of not get kind of like, frustrated as a fan, right? You're just like, why can't these guys just stay loyal to a team? Yeah. But you get it at the same time. Like, yeah, these guys want to play where they come, you know, play back home and stuff like that.
Very true. Going back to the draft, I'll go over the draft picks. So 19th overall, they picked Jacoby Walter, who was a guard out of Baylor at the time. He's expected to be a pretty good two-way guard as well. So, and with having, they needed a replacement for Gary Trent Jr., who left for Milwaukee Bucks this offseason. So they drafted Jacoby Walter. Their next pick that they had in the first round, they actually drafted a guy that was best friends with Scotty Barnes, and that was Jonathan Mogbo at 31st overall.
You got to think, because he's picking up his best friend, that they're doing this to kind of keep Barnes there, right? Like, that's the plan. Obviously, the guy's a good player too, but there's got to be some sort of inside thought there that, you know, we're going to draft this guy because it'll keep Barnes with us. Pardon me.
Yeah, like, interesting tidbits about their relationship. They first met in grade 4, best friends. He's being basically reunited with his childhood friend from West Beach in Florida. They played together and against each other throughout the basketball ranks. They've ridden scooters through Toronto together.
Hand in hand.
And funny enough, once in a live stream, Barnes did say that Mopo was going to be a future Raptor.
Oh, wow.
Interesting.
Did you say they had 3 first-round draft picks this draft? Like this draft, past season? Oh, wow.
Just because of trades and whatnot. That's cool.
And then the third player that they picked was at 45th overall. They acquired this pick, actually, in the second round. I'll go over the trade in a second here. Jamal Sheed, who's also a 6 foot guard. He was originally picked by the Kings and then traded over to Toronto as part of the Davion Mitchell trade. Going a little bit over Davion Mitchell, he was a 9th overall pick by the Sacramento Kings back in 2021. The Raptors traded for Davion Mitchell, and as well as the Jamal Sheed pick, as well as a Russian player known as Sasha Vezenkov. All the Raptors had to give up was a player named Jalen McDaniels, who was a 2nd-round pick by the Charlotte Hornets back in 2019.
Jeez. Active.
And Davion Mitchell is a point guard, so he'll do good to back up Emmanuel Quickley. So they acquired Emmanuel Quickley as well as RJ Barrett.
Quickley?
Quickley.
Quickley. Yeah, quickly. As opposed to slowly.
Exactly. Do it quickly.
Dad joke.
Oh, man.
Yeah, they actually acquired Quickley with RJ Barrett as part of the OG and Anobi trade. And they signed Quickley to a 5-year, $175 million contract. And he's known as an up-and-coming point guard. So it might seem like a lot of money, but it might actually work out really well for them. Having Davion Mitchell as the backup point guard, it's going to actually be a pretty decent combination for them. And the other big signing that they did this offseason, they had a bunch of notable signs, but the big one I'll go over is Scotty Barnes signed a rookie extension, 5 years, $225 million, which can jump up to $270 million if he reaches the Supermax criteria.
The cool thing about being able to, and I don't want to say dumb players, because they didn't have to get rid of Anunoby, they didn't have to get rid of Siakam. They were rumored to because they're both in contract years. Am I correct with that?
That's correct.
Yeah. So when you have assets like those two guys who are coveted through the entire NBA, you're obviously going to have much more success in getting players back, draft picks back, and put yourself in a situation that the Raptors have done. And then it sounds like they've really capitalized on that with the space they have for money, the draft picks that they've translated into players now, and sort of that whole culture, right? You know, friends, that sort of thing. Am I kind of on the right path? Yeah. It just seems kind of a natural way, and we can always relate to hockey the same way.
Yeah.
When, you know, trade deadline, you dump a player for a good player, a prospect, and a pick. Well, that pick's usually going to be a first round, and, you know, then really, yeah, you're losing, say, 75, 80 points a year, in hockey terms, but, you know, getting 2, possibly 3 serviceable players back immediately.
Yeah.
Yeah. The thing about it in hockey terms too, well, probably the same in basketball terms, is that the people that are trading away these players to get the picks, in the most part, they're on a rebuild or a retool. So they're okay with losing those points because they're trying to redevelop their team, you know, with a new core four or whatever, right? So, like, in hockey terms, like, I think about, you know, Calgary giving up all their players this year. It's kind of because they don't have a choice, really.
Yeah, when you're basically needing to start over, you have to do everything you can to build back up. Other kind of just notable offseason moves by the Raptors, they did resign Garrett Temple, who is a small forward for the team, as well as a center, Bruno Fernando, who is an Angolian basketball player and plays center.
Mongolian?
Angolian. From Angola.
From where?
Angola.
That sounds made up. Like,
are you messing with us?
Is that like, I mean, I apologize if somebody's listening to us.
I also apologize.
From Angola.
Angola.
I have never heard of Angola. It sounds like a place that you don't want to get some sort of cystoscopy.
So, one thing with the Masai Ujiri, he's actually pretty well known
Central Africa.
Okay. Yeah, for getting players from Africa, being from Africa himself. You know, we had Bruno Kablako, who was from Congo.
Yeah.
He's, yeah, African-born player. I know that we've had one other, but I can't remember his name.
Wasn't Pascal Siakam from France or something? Like, he's a French player?
No, he is.
Or, like, Moroccan or something?
Yeah, I believe he was actually Moroccan.
But Morocco is mainly French-speaking, aren't they? Yeah, that's what I thought.
And by the way, I really do mean no disrespect to people from Angola. I'm just dumb.
Yeah, me too. Know. Like, obviously, just didn't know. We don't know our geography, especially in South Africa.
Not Moroccan, sorry.
Or in Africa.
Sorry, Pascal. Cameroon.
Cameroon. Okay.
Cameroon.
Very interesting. That's a whole geography thing we can talk about in a future episode.
Yeah. And that's, like I said, besides Bruno Fernando, the only other thing that they did was waive a couple of players. The guy they acquired in the Sacramento deal, the Russian, Vizenkov, they did waive, and he signed back over in Europe. And that they'd have a guy named Jordan Freeman Liberty, who they also waived and has left the team.
You know, what I will say is that I'm really excited, I think, for the upcoming fall and winter, where we have to focus more on hockey and basketball, for that matter.
And football.
And football, for sure. You know, especially NFL, as
well, and also baseball is coming to an end in October.
It is, yeah. So we're going to have some really exciting stuff to talk about. And, I mean, doing this podcast every week, we have no choice but to be up to date and pay more attention. So I'm actually really excited for that, because I found last year specifically for me, even with hockey, which I can't believe I'm admitting this, but I wasn't as in tune as I have been every other year for the past 20 years.
Maybe
I have no idea why.
Maybe subconsciously I knew that we were going to do this podcast at some point, because I was very in tune with hockey last year.
I know you were.
I love watching hockey no matter what. I'm a Canucks fan through and through, but I will watch any team's play.
Yeah.
For the most part, my wife hates it because, like, I don't spend time with my family, but I love watching hockey, and if they want to watch with me, that's cool too. I just can't let them watch Canuck games with me because I get a little too emotional, and they don't like that. But
don't we all, brother?
Yeah.
Don't we all?
One thing I do love doing with my family is watch movies, and we talk a lot about movies on this podcast. For those of you who are new to listening to us, we talk about sports, but we also talk about movies because we're three movie buffs. I wouldn't call us cinephiles per se, but definitely movie buffs for
sports
sure.
Sports and entertainment.
Yeah. So, guys, I feel like this time around, we always talk about our top favorite movies in specific genres and whatnot. I feel like this time around, let's talk about our favorite movie series. Now, what I mean by that is any series of movies that are about three or more. And how about we steer away from, say, the superhero genre, just because you could literally name any superhero genre.
That's episode 12.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. let's talk about our top five favorite movies series of all time.
Well, I'll start. I'll go with my number five. And this was hard, guys. Earlier we discussed maybe even only doing three. And I was like, no, I want to do 10.
Yeah.
I really struggled, actually. But I'll bite the bullet. And my number five was The Hunger Games.
Yeah.
Classic Jennifer Lawrence. Kind of, I mean, I wouldn't say put her on the map, but it really projected her career forward.
You think she was put on some people's hall pass list?
I know she's on mine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most definitely.
Paul doesn't even need a hall pass.
That's true. Yeah, definitely Hunger Games. I enjoyed the movies. There were some in the series I've never seen before. Okay. I've seen the first one, and I believe I've seen the second one, but I don't think I've seen any after that. No, that's not true. I saw the third one, because the third one is the last one. It's the last one with her in it, correct? Am I right in saying that?
Well, there's two, like the last movie, quote unquote, is a two-part.
Yes.
Yeah. Mockingjay part one.
So the third one is technically part two. That's what I mean. I've seen part one and part two of the Mockingjay ones, but I haven't seen any of the other ones after that.
There only is one spinoff, I believe.
Just the one? I thought there was two for some reason, but you might know better than me.
Yeah, it's the Hunger Games Ballad of...
That's a prequel, right?
A prequel, yeah.
Right, okay.
Ballad of Snakes or something.
I haven't seen that one.
No, for sure. But again,
I have seen it.
We are talking about series that are three or more. So in this case, part one and part two, you know, are included in that when we talk about that. So
a Ballad of Songbirds,
Song
and
Dance or something.
Songbirds and Snakes.
You had snakes.
I knew it was something like that.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm a movie encyclopedia. Sometimes I just have to jog the memory.
Yeah. So you had Hunger Games, Catching Fire, and then Mockingjay Part 1, Mockingjay Part 2.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought the three that I have seen were really, really good, really entertaining, and definitely enjoy them.
Yeah, I've seen them as well. I really love Jennifer Lawrence. She's just an incredible actress. She's done amazingly for herself, albeit she stepped away from the spotlight for a bit.
What I will say about Jennifer Lawrence is I feel like in terms of her acting chops, she's really gotten versatile with what she does. Yeah. Like I saw the most recent one she did, which was a comedy where she has to go out with a guy because she's trying to make money and his parents are like offering to buy her or give her a car or something like that. So it's a really funny movie and I off the top of my head forget what it's called, but she's really funny in it. So
yeah, you can't really go wrong with her. The prequel was good. I did see it as well. It does have one of Hollywood's like most hated actresses in the movie.
Oh,
Rachel Zegler.
Oh, I don't know who that is.
She's just known to be quite woke and speaks her mind quite negatively. Slated to be in the live action remake of Snow White.
Was she the one who was complaining about having to wear a dress all day? Yeah. I literally just heard about this yesterday.
And as far as I know, I don't know that anything's confirmed that they are recasting her.
Wow.
Maybe she should have gone back to sleep.
Paul, what's your number five?
My number five. My number four and number five could actually be interchangeable. But based upon the history of number four, this one's my number five, the Toy Story series.
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 1, 2, 3, 4.
They have another one coming out as far as I know.
As far as I know as well.
Yeah.
Really great set of movies. I remember watching the first Toy Story. I believe I was 10 years old when that came out. And, 93 or 94. I might have been 11.
I think it's 94. The reason why I say that is because I just moved to Nanaimo, and I went to see it in the theater with 95. So it was the following year. I went to see it in the theater with a friend for a birthday party, and it was the first time I'd ever seen a CGI movie. I was just, like, blown away.
Yeah, and even for back then, like the animation still holds up now.
Yeah,
it really does from the first one. And Tom Hanks was like cloud nine. Everyone loved Tom Hanks.
He's still my favorite actor.
Choosing him for Woody was a great pick, and he's done all four movies.
No slouch with Tim Allen.
Yeah,
either.
Yeah,
not at all.
Classic.
There's nary a thing that Tim Allen is in that I don't like.
I agree with that. Yeah.
And you got to love John Lasseter in Pixar. Ratzenberger.
John Ratzenberger.
Great as the pig.
He's from Cheers. I know him from Cheers. But yeah.
Oh, Wallace Shawn was Rex, right?
I love him.
I can hear the voice now. Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
he's done it again.
Inconceivable. Love that guy. Definitely. My number five is Ocean's 11 series.
Nice. I wondered if somebody would pick that.
Yeah, I freaking love those movies. And what's funny is my wife hates them. She can't stand those movies. And I'll watch them every time they're on, like a movie channel. I will watch them because I just am so entertained by... I love the premise of like plotting a heist and pulling it off and doing it in a way where it even confuses the audience, where the audience is like, how are they going to get this? How are they going to do this? The Ocean's 11 series, every single movie, they pull it off. And it surprises you every time. It's just so entertaining. I love it so much.
Real quick, what's your favorite George Clooney movie other than The Ocean's?
Did you mention it last
week? I might need a minute on that one.
I can only think of one that I actually even enjoyed, and that was From Dusk Till Dawn.
Yeah.
That's a really good
one. That's probably the one, honestly. But I love that movie.
I got six little friends and they can all run faster than you.
The cool thing about him and what's funny is I have a friend named Todd who is a huge like movie buff, but he's a huge Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez fan. And he he's also a Leafs fan. Yeah. I should point that out. But yeah, so he's a huge Robert Rodriguez fan and a huge Tarantino fan. Robert Rodriguez is the one who directed From Dusk Till Dawn. But every time we watch George Clooney in that movie, he points out the little things that he does in the movie that are what grab his attention. And one of the things that George Clooney does in that movie is he tilts his head a lot. And just the way he tilts his head, every time he sees he's just like... my friend Todd is blown away by this. He just goes, look at it. He did it again. It's just the way he tilts his head. It's just a little thing like that.
Now, is that a George Clooneyism or is that him basically trying to portray an actor that's like confident? Like,
it's totally
what
part
did
of the
you just say?
It's totally part of the character. It right. has nothing. It's not something that George Clooney does. However, you could argue it is a look that George Clooney does give sometimes. Yeah. But in this movie specifically, he does the look because it's like a... it's like an ism of the character, you know? And so it's wonderful for that reason.
Sadly, he's kind of known for destroying a beloved character too.
Yes, well,
do we know?
I don't think he's alone in that, but yes, you're right. The moment Michael Keaton wasn't there, then it's destroyed. So
Kilmer did pretty good.
But again, we're not talking about superhero movies. We will get into that into another
one. I'll go with my number four, and it really isn't all of the movies, because again, there's like 18 of them now, but the Terminator series. We talked about it, I think, in our first episode, how, you know, T2 was kind of one of my top movies ever. And again, one of those examples that I watched it before I saw the first one. Although in this situation, I don't think it was very long before. I did watch the first one shortly after. But even the third one, which had a lot of like bad reviews, it was entertaining enough for me, although not necessarily because of the actors, just the story was good enough for me to be entertained.
The cool thing about the Terminator series, though, is that even though the third one wasn't the best when you compare it to the others, Salvation, which was the next one after that, was like incredible.
Yeah, it was good.
So you know, when you look at those, there is a series of movies there that really, really work.
And I know you didn't like Genesis, did you?
No.
You didn't like it either?
It was okay.
I actually enjoyed it quite a bit. It wasn't my favorite in the series, but Emilia Clarke and Jason Clarke. Mm. Jason Clarke is the guy I'm thinking of.
Jai Courtney was the guy that played
Kyle Reese.
Kyle Reese.
Right. He was in another series of mine that actually didn't make my list, but almost did. Mm-hmm. But Terminator series is my number four.
Probably would have been higher on my list if it wasn't for the last two movies, unfortunately. Was not a fan of the last two. The Indiana Jones series.
Yeah. I was kind of hoping one of you guys picked it because I didn't. Even forgetting about the Crystal Skulls one, the most recent one, I don't know if you've seen it.
I thought
it was quite good. I enjoyed it a lot. I saw it in the theater. I mean, obviously nothing compared to the originals, but like still really good movies. Yeah.
It's really the most recent ones are the reason why it's down on my list. Like, I would say Temple of Doom is still probably my favorite out of the three. Raiders of the Lost Ark is awesome, and The Last Crusade is played on TV all the time anyways.
Yeah. It's kind of forced down your throat. It's still good, though. Like my favorite is actually Raiders. That's my favorite. That's, but yes, 100%, I agree with you. Like, really good movies.
Really, really good movies. And like I said, the last two would be higher on my list. But Harrison Ford, he's twice on my list. A little sneak preview. So.
Ooh.
Okay.
All right.
All right. I'm going to be thinking about it.
I have an idea already what he's talking about. My number four is going to be the Godfather series. Godfather 1, 2, and 3. Yes. Have you seen them? Have you seen either of them?
I feel like an hole right now because I haven't seen any of the Indiana Jones movies, and I have not seen any of the Godfather. And again, not a situation where I've gone, screw that, not going to do it. I'm not interested. I just haven't.
If you're in that boat, if anybody's listening and you're in that boat, I definitely recommend at least watching one of those movies. One of the Indiana Jones movies, not the newest ones. Go with like Raiders or The Last Crusade or something like that. Probably go with the first one just for the sake of character building and things like that, so you understand who the characters are. Same with Godfather movies. Like, watch the first Godfather movie so you understand what's going on. But just incredible acting, incredible writing. Like, and it's not just like they don't just go around killing people. Like, there's a story behind it, and just like this goes back to like, you know, early on in the careers of like Al Pacino and then, you know, in the third one, we're talking Robert De Niro just starting out, and like just such good movies. They're so well done. Very entertaining. The ending of the first one is wonderful. Literally film schools talk about it. Like, just that kind of storytelling. You know, I definitely recommend checking at least one of them out so you can kind of get an idea of what we're talking about.
I did see them when I was young, but I've got to jog my memory to remember some of it.
So I was talking to the guys at work today, and I was telling them that we were going to do this, and I was naming my top three. And Devin, my brother, was able to get the first two, but I said, there's no way you're going to get the top three. or he's not going to get the third one. Yeah. And I kept giving him clues. You know, it's an action movie. New or older? I said, it's older. He gave me a couple examples, and I went, nope, you're not going to get it, man. You're not. He actually finally did get it. And my number three is Lethal Weapon.
Oh, yeah.
Lethal Weapon.
What's cool about Lethal Weapon, about the series specifically, is that all of the movies are really good.
They are.
Like, there isn't a movie where you'd be like, I could have done without that one. Like, these, all of them were really good, and they were entertaining throughout.
I was thinking individually about the movies earlier, and I was almost thinking that exact same question. Like, I wonder if there's a movie that was kind of crappier than the rest, and really, I couldn't come up with one. It's like, if I had to pick one that was maybe the worst, I'd maybe say number two.
Yeah.
But for the most part, like, Gary Busey in number one, along with the other guys, Joe Pesci coming in this, it was the second movie, I think.
It was, yeah.
So I could, maybe it isn't the worst, because no. Joe Pesci's great.
But that's the point, right?
That's like, right. And then the fourth one, I think it was 4 years after the third one. So I think the third one was 94.
Yes. Yeah.
And then I think 98 was the fourth one. To bring in, I mean, Jet Li, of course, and Chris Rock.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, whose face is still healing from the Oscars. But just, and the guys, and I didn't know this, and I'm going to have to look it up, but the guys at work were saying that they heard rumors that they're trying to do another one.
Yeah, I heard that too, actually.
Kind of like the Axel Foley
reboot. I hope they do, to be honest.
Yeah, and apparently all of the cast is coming back.
Yeah, so it's great. You know, the cool thing about Chris Rock's character is that he and Joe Pesci were going at each other,
yeah,
basically riffing on all the stuff they want to complain about, which
that's
is
right.
Wonderful.
I love the line, this is the badge, this is the gun.
Yeah, wonderful movies, man. The Lethal Weapon, definitely recommend. If you have not seen Lethal Weapon, see at least one of them, but see all of them.
I tried to get Tiff to watch them. I think we made it through the first two, and then she's like, nee.
Really?
Yeah. It's not really your thing.
That's too bad.
Again, a nostalgia thing for me, right? Watching it as a kid.
So. Totally.
My number three has seven movies in the series. One of them's considered kind of a prequel. Kind of put Sigourney Weaver on the map. The Alien series.
I haven't seen those either.
You haven't seen the Alien?
Brandon's got some movies to watch.
I got homework to do, yeah. I might have to force myself. I tried to watch the first Aliens. I was sick from work last year one day. And I saw it on, I don't know if it was Netflix or Prime or whatever. It was on one of them. And I thought, you know what? I've been saying I'm going to try it. I grabbed some lunch, sat down, turned it on, got comfortable. I made about 13 minutes. I'm like, I can't do this, man.
I thought you were going to say you fell asleep.
No. I almost wish it might have been better at that time. But I got to give it a solid try.
There comes a point where you have to force yourself to watch a movie. If you start feeling bored, like, force yourself to watch at least 15 minutes more and just kind of, like, see if it gets any better from that moment.
I don't think it was the boredom. I think it's just in the late 70s, the technology, the way the acting was. Like, it's completely different style, right? Everything was robotic.
Fair enough.
And you watch, you know, the little buttons flashing in the background, and you're kind of like, oh my God. Like,
have you ever seen 2001 A Space Odyssey out of curiosity? Okay, so that's a similar, I can see you would have a similar mindset to a movie like that because it takes place when, or because it was filmed when it was filmed. So the idea of the technology, you know, is definitely more old school kind of thinking. But the story itself is the part that I guess you're supposed to, you know, pay attention to. And I think that's what makes it an intriguing movie. Like, that, not using that in your example, but like just the fact that it's similar. Like, you're pulled away because you're thinking about the technology and all that other crap, right? But
yeah, like, going back to the Alien series here, a couple of the notable ones I really liked in that series was first one was good with Sigourney Weaver. Obviously, Aliens was huge. Like, that one was done, directed by James Cameron, same guy who directed T2, and definitely dialed up the
Aliens was the second one.
It was the second one. Yeah. Yep, definitely dialed up the intensity and obviously more aliens compared to just one in the first one. Wasn't the only one that I really liked was Sigourney. Alien 3, which is considered not so great by a lot of fans, was also one of my favorites. I really liked. I was kind of what put David Finkner on the map in terms of directing.
David Fincher.
Fincher, sorry, thank you. Yeah, people didn't like how, I guess, he did the camera angles. Like, they actually tried to do it from the view of the alien climbing on walls and chasing after people. So a lot of critics didn't like that. I thought that was great.
Yeah.
It really, really added to it. I wasn't a huge fan of Resurrection. Wasn't terrible, just it kind of, I felt, kind of took away from the previous ones. But the other one that I really liked was Prometheus. Again, not critically acclaimed, but really, it was Ridley Scott coming back to the Alien series. And I thought he actually did a really good job of introducing how these xenomorphs came into the Alien universe.
And on a side note, like, kind of the idea of the crossover too with AVP, Aliens versus Predators, still kind of a cool movie. I remember watching that movie too. It was like really fun. But
and I've seen Covenant, again, gory. It was good, but not great. Again, one of those stories that it could have been done a lot differently because it was kind of the sequel to Prometheus. Haven't seen Romulus, but it does have a high score on Rotten Tomatoes right now.
My number three is a movie I know, a movie series I know Brandon's not going to agree with, the Bourne movies. I'm a big fan of the Jason Bourne movies. Just something about the kind of spy genre, kind of like it's a combination of like spy genre and then action with the fights and the car chases and things like that. But the storyline as well, like you kind of, especially in the first movie, you look at it and you're kind of like, who is this guy? The first question you ask is, who is this guy? Why does he have two bullets in his back? And what's going to happen throughout the rest of the movie? And then you find out like the CIA is chasing him. Okay, well, how is he going to get out of this? You know, so you're constantly asking these questions as you watch the movies. And I think that's what I like the most about it. And then they come up with a new movie and you're just like, they're still chasing after him. How is he going to get away from these guys? How is he going to have a normal life? So you're just constantly asking questions. And I think that's the thing that I love the most about the movies.
It was surprising to me that they went beyond three films for the series. I never saw the one with
Jeremy Renner. The Legacy. It was good. It just wasn't the same.
Yeah,
it follows a whole separate character, so it's like literally has nothing to do with Jason Bourne's character except the idea that he's a legend, right? Like, so it's definitely a good movie, but like I said, it's not the same as the other Bourne movies.
What did you think of Bourne after that?
I loved it. I thought it was great. So same. The one thing I'll say about the Jason Bourne movies is they are longer movies. Yes. So you kind of go into it and all this stuff happens and you're like, okay, well, it's over now. And then no, there's like more stuff that goes on, right? So I could see why that would pull somebody away and kind of make them be like, you know. But I like it for the story and I like it for the action and everything involved. So for me, it's definitely a series that I love.
I'm going to ask a controversial question. Could Matt Damon been casted better?
The character? Like his character?
His character.
No, I don't think
so. Yeah, no, I don't think so.
You think
so
he's perfect for it?
Yeah, I do. I really do.
I think that's one of the reasons I wasn't as drawn to it for me, is I found the selection of him, not that he didn't do an absolutely fantastic job with training, preparing, getting everything ready for his roles, but I just felt it was a bit of a weak selection. Now, I can't come up with an answer for you as to who I thought may have been a better selection. I probably should have done that ahead of time before I asked this controversial question.
Yeah.
But when I think of those movies, I've seen maybe not all. I've seen the first three for sure. Mm-hmm. And they were fine. They're not going to top my list, but they were entertaining to watch. They were 100%. Good films. They were absolutely good films. Don't have a bad thing to say about them. But when I think about maybe the reason why it doesn't draw me in when I think of Matt Damon, I don't really think of this overbearing action star who, you know, could kill you with a ballpoint pen in a second.
Funny is he does do that.
oh really?
But what's interesting about that, and I think that's probably the reason he was cast, to be honest, was that he's not this like obvious action star, right? And so that way when he does the things he does, or when the character does what the character does, you kind of go, okay, well, it makes sense. He looks like an everyman, right? And so he can kind of get away with that. But yeah, it's definitely intriguing for me. Like when I look at it, I'm like, okay. And you talk about killing a guy with a ballpoint pen. He does do that in the movie. So, you know, if you didn't know that, you want to check that out, go see the
Sounds
movie.
Fun to me.
Yeah.
I'll keep my second one short. We've talked about it in the past, but my number two is Die Hard.
Yeah.
My favorite is the third one. My second favorite is the first movie. My third favorite is the second movie, and then after that, you can just roll the dice. It doesn't really matter. To me, it's 1, 2, and 3 anyway.
Yeah, the newer movies are kind of their side stories that don't really have anything to do with the originals.
For sure. I don't have anything else to say about them other than the fact that they were just fantastic.
My order would be the exact opposite of you in terms of my favorite Die Hard.
Yeah, you think the second one's the best?
Yes.
Yeah. Why? What's the reason? What sticks out for you?
It was probably to do with the villain. I found William Sadler. I found his character to be actually quite menacing, even more so than Hans Gruber in the first one. So I
and his brother.
I just quite liked that role for him. He didn't do much after that, William Sadler, in terms of acting, but you definitely noticed his character in the second one. That's why it topped for me.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the first one. It is a Christmas movie, so we watch it at Christmas, and it's just like, for me, that's, I love it. And the third one's probably my second favorite, and then two after that. So I just, yeah. And you know, and Alan Rickman, rest in peace, is honestly an incredible actor. Like, there's nothing he's in that I'm just like, this guy sucks. Like, no, he's awesome. Like, in everything he's in. So, no, I definitely, I can agree with.
Took him a long time to get into film, too.
Yeah.
He was a
stage actor.
For a long time. Yeah.
Thespian.
I alluded to the series earlier with the Indiana Jones. And one of their movies is in my top 5 movies of all time. The Star Wars movies. The prequel, the Rey series, is what I will call it, the most recent ones, and obviously episodes 4, 5, and 6 when they first released. How can you not love Star Wars? How can you not love R2-D2? How can you not love Luke getting his father's redemption? You know, how can you not love all these characters? Leia was, you know, Carrie Fisher, rest in peace as well.
Yep.
Gorgeous. Oh, those movies.
Good news, boys. I've seen those ones.
Yeah. Just not in the right order. But
and just like the different aliens, the different characters. Jabba the Hutt is like one of the most menacing characters that doesn't move.
It's literally like, it's been described, and I agree with you 100%, but it's been described as a Western in space. I couldn't agree more. Like, Star Wars, it's... You do sit down and watch all of the movies because you love them so much, right? So much. And I don't know anybody who doesn't like Star Wars.
And even though I'd probably rank the prequel series the lowest out of the three, some people actually rank the newest the lowest of the least. They still entertain me. Like, I could sit there. If I wanted to do a Star Wars movie marathon, I could sit there and watch all the Star Wars movies because it's just that engaging of a story, and the characters are so interesting. It's funny you see the difference of action from when the first movies came out in terms of like this lightsaber battles to, you know, what the prequel series and then the most recent series and how much choreography and all that stuff has changed. It doesn't matter that the choreography is bad in some aspects. At least I consider it bad terms of the old movies. It's still so interesting to watch.
You're right. I mean, it's true. It's not just the choreography, but it's also the capabilities of the actors too. But it's the graphics have gotten better and everything. So, but yeah, even though we don't like the first prequels, there's still things about them that we like, and obviously, like, it was exciting to see Darth Vader become Darth Vader and stuff like that. I remember being in the theater when it happened, and we heard that first, and we're just like, oh. And then, you know, it's just like that excitement, right? I worked at the movie theater when this happened, and I remember putting the film together. I was a projectionist, and seeing it on the film when you see Darth Vader for the first time, I was just like, so excited. I was nerding out.
I know that one scene that I can think of, and I don't even know what line he said, but it took me a lot longer than it should have to see episodes 1, 2, and 3, like Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, and Revenge of the Sith. And I remember seeing Attack of the Clones in the theaters with my cousin. And the scene when all hell's breaking loose, Samuel L. Jackson's got his purple lightsaber, which was awesome, by the way. And then Yoda, who you really haven't seen participate other than just kind of moseying around and saying stupid crap that nobody understands what he's saying. He actually fights, right? And he just says this one-liner, like a classic Arnold Schwarzenegger one-liner or something, and whips out his lightsaber and just starts kicking ass. And everybody in the theater is just like, yeah! You know, like,
I think it was something along the lines of, if fight you I must, then fight you I will.
Or yeah, like that. Totally. Yeah, it was awesome. It really was.
My number two, I believe you guys will agree with me on this, the Back to the Future films. Back to the Future 1, 2, and 3. And I'm one of those people that love all of them. Yeah, I think growing up, I did like number 2 more than I liked the others. But I can watch all three, no problem. I did go to the theater when they re-released them and watched all three. And great movies.
Yeah, very, very good. Michael J. Fox. You know, too bad that he's got Parkinson's. And yeah. Obviously his career had to wind down from that. But he was perfect for the role, and he wasn't actually their original choice.
I know he wasn't. Yeah,
Eric Stoltz. Yeah, yeah, was their original choice.
Yeah.
I just won't chime in because I haven't seen 2 or 3.
Okay, you've seen one though.
I've seen one.
What are your thoughts on one?
Excellent.
Yes,
very excellent.
So how come you haven't seen 2 or 3? Just because?
I don't know. Okay. I really don't know. Right. I'm going to need you guys to send me your list so I can do some more homework. Because I just feel embarrassed in here. Like, I feel like I'm a movie buff, and then you guys are, and I'm like, oh, you're so dumb. Just watch them. I don't have an issue with it.
Yeah, no, they're definitely, and they're different. They're all different, but 2 is definitely my favorite of all of them. You know, because it goes, well, I don't want to give too much away, but 2 is definitely my favorite. If you haven't seen them, definitely see them. The one cool factor of all these movies we're naming off here, how many movies has Steven Spielberg been involved in?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Back to the Future, Terminator, Indiana Jones. Like, incredible, incredible stuff that he's done. And so, yeah. Back to the Future series 1, 2, and 3, check it out.
Well, before we quickly segue, because that was excellent, Joe, I see you. What you were doing there, and I see what you're trying to do. But I did just want to say, even with Parkinson's, Michael J. Fox is still an absolute incredible guitar player, too.
Yeah.
Like, he really does
play. He still does well. Voice acting work, too, by the way. I don't know if you knew that.
So, another Steven Spielberg, absolute gem of a series, Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
I can't.
Slash World.
What's that?
Slash World.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So, I mean, those ones I did see in order, actually. I remember, I don't think I saw the first one in the theaters, but I definitely saw the second one, The Lost World, in the theaters. And I remember going down to Nickel Street when the Caprice Theater was still open. Dad, Devin, and I all went and saw The Lost World. I love Jeff Goldblum so much. I mean, in The Lost World, he's very prevalent. And of course, you've got Sam Neill, Laura Dern. Yeah. But just Jeff Goldblum for me, the comedic relief and just the guy that he is in tense situations. I just love it. I love that type of acting.
I used to hate Lost World when I was younger. I've watched it since in my adult years now. It is really good, actually. Jeff Goldblum can deliver those one-liners like nobody else.
Do you know which one I hated? The third one.
I don't like the third one
The third one, you know what I hated the most about it, though? Was, and it reminded me, did you ever read the book The Lord of the Flies in school?
Yes.
I did not, actually.
Okay, no. So in The Lord of the Flies, without giving too much away, it's one of those stories that just ends. Yeah. It just ends. Stuff is happening, and then boom, it's over. That's what happened in that movie. And I remember watching it in the theater and being like, what the hell is going on? You can't just end. But that's exactly what they did.
Well, it was part of that like boom and bust era where let's introduce a new dinosaur that is kind of scary. My number one would be Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings.
And Brandon's got the
you
biggest.
You shall not pass. I've seen them. Wish I hadn't.
That's because your wife made you watch them.
So the culmination of those movies, it was just so well done. The characters, you cared for all the characters. You cared what was happening to the characters. And just it was, even though it had 10 different endings for the Return of the King, just a great, great culmination of all the movies put together, and even the extended versions. I could sit through the extended versions and watch those too. They were just incredibly well
done. It takes you about a year, but for sure. It does. Absolutely.
Same with the Hobbit series. Again, the Hobbit series, I didn't think it was as good, part of the Lord of the Rings series, because I love the Hobbit. It's one of my favorite books.
And all I can think of when I think about it is I wish they had eye watches back then so they could track their steps.
Okay, my number one, you guys may agree with, may not agree with. It is my favorite. It's one of those series that I can go back to and watch over and over and over again, and that is the Rocky series. Nice. I love all of the Rocky movies. The first one, so Sylvester Stallone created the Rocky series. He created Rocky, the character, and just probably the most brilliant writing for that time, I think. And yeah, just absolutely love the movies. The character build up, you absolutely want the character to succeed. You want him to you know, win the championship, and you follow along each movie. I think most people would agree the fourth one is one of their favorites, if not their favorite, with Ivan Drago and Rocky fighting him. And yeah, it's just definitely, it's, you know, it's something I'm passionate watching when I watch it.
Swedish actor playing a Russian.
Yes.
Guess who hasn't seen them?
Oh, man, bro.
I know.
Oh, you're missing out. They are definitely.
He's taking notes. And it does create a timeline effect for future movies after that, too. And, you know, there is the Rocky series, which ends with Rocky Balboa. And then, that's the name of the final movie. And then after that is the Creed series, which he is a character of in the first two. But it does continue on without him. So I don't count that as part of this series, but definitely recommend checking out Rocky 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, and 6. 5 is probably the least favored, just because it goes crazy. It's a crazy movie, but it's still entertaining for me. I still watch it, and I still, you know, like it along with all the other ones.
Awesome.
So that is our favorite movie series of all time, but make sure you check out future episodes of the Puck and Pod. I want to thank you guys so much for listening. Once again, this episode is dedicated to Johnny and Matthew Goudreau, who we did recently lose, and it's very tragic. Thank you guys so much again for listening. My name is Joe.
I'm Brandon.
And I'm Paul.
We will see you guys in the next one.